We've been calling this Your Life Matters Week. On Tuesday, Senator Donnelly was here. We were talking about crime and violence. We had three pastors in the House from Pastor Moore and Pastor Covington and Pastor Jackson. We're talking about the things they were doing to take a bite out of crime, putting young people and young adults doing productive things in the summertime. And then yesterday, the doctors were here. We had trauma surgeons and stuff, the folks from Eskenazi talking about their prescription for hope, as well as the perspective of crime and what do we do from the folks that have to put people back together. But today, it's a community conversation. The chief of police is here in uniform with the two stars on. The public safety director of the city and county is here. He's even in his uniform, kind of sort of, you know, it's the suit with the red tie and the white shirt. Troy Riggs and Rick Height are here for the full 2 hours, and they've been going around the community having community conversations. So here's the deal. We're going to find out what is actually going on in the streets. What are the statistics? What is really going on? They want to hear from you. How do we reduce crime even more? Because they're saying in the statistics, crime is down already this year from where it was last year, except for murders, homicides, folks killing each other. 239-1310, 239-1310, get you in conversation, or you can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, or a email at praiseindy.com. With that, Chief and Director, welcome.
Thank you, Amos.
Thanks for having us.
Why are you all having community conversations?
Well, I think it's just the way we solve problems in our communities. We need to sit down and talk about the issues that we're facing as a community, and we need to work together as a community, and it's really something when you sit down with individuals, and it doesn't matter what age, race they are, the things that you learn, and it's some of the hopelessness you see in our community. It's a big concern, but it's something that the chief and I really felt passionate about and talked about, and it's good to see that his commanders are doing this, the chief's doing this, we're going to coffees, we have large groups, small groups, we have groups that focus on juvenile crime, groups that focus on single pregnant young ladies, and then the chief and the work that he does day in and day out. We're hearing a lot from the community. And the good news is we have people that are stepping up to support us as well.
When I looked at the statistics for 2013, virtually every category was down except what you all call criminal homicide.
Yes.
And what is it this year, roughly year to date, compared to this time last year? Is it still that same pattern? Everything down except homicide?
It is, Amos, two things. I think it's driving down in one respect because of two things. We didn't do just something that normal police departments do. We give you the numbers. Mm-hmm. But we broke it down by gender. We also broke it down by the relationship. And we often got attacked on that. And the reason being that's why that's important is we need to talk about that 1% or 2% that really are the ones who drive the whole issue. We believe we can conquer this. And your life matters does mean just that. Your life matters. And by identifying those persons who actually engage in who they are in those communities, we'll continue to drive it down. What we found, the director and I, was we had to look at everything in terms of systematic approaches, including disposition of cases going back, looking at charging, disposition of cases, and the long-term outcome of those victims and or suspects. And what we're finding, there's a lot more in common. The victim today is now the suspect tomorrow and vice versa. So we had to break that cycle, and that's what we're doing with families and this whole community conversation does. That it gives us an opportunity to really assess the community's feelings about that. But also, we've done some impact meetings also and discovered long-term information about homicides or shooting that occurred that people have been wanting to share. But by us going to the community, we've been able to get information about closure and also which was really driving the issue in the first place. We hear about random drug dealers and things of that nature, but we found it was a little deeper than that. The other thing we did last year that was important, that we did the open space of safe places. The idea was to eliminate the street violence. We wanted to push it off the streets. We removed it from the streets where we don't have viral carnage every day on the street, hearing on the 6 o'clock news about people being shot summarily in the middle of the street. We're finding that a lot of it occurs indoors and a lot of it's going back to where it originally came from. And we're going after that piece of it, too. So the information we get is both intel for the community, but also helps us in a two-way conversation understand how it works.
We'll probably hear some of this in the reaction from the community, but what is being done to try to put these drive-by pharmaceutical places completely out of business? I mean, chief and director, do y'all need to call the attorney general, the president, and get some out of town, out of state, out of country undercover officers to come in here, make the buys, get a drone somewhere, reach in, get the video, get the surveillance, and shut them down? Because you all have heard it as you've gone out. Your commanders have heard it. Hey, we see the folks coming from Carmel and Greenwood and what have you, driving up, buying the drugs. You don't do anything to them, and then y'all sit here and nothing happens to the drug house across the street.
Well, back to the point about disposition of cases. We're looking at the cases that are being charged. We've taken over $3.5 million off the street in terms of money connected to a drug gang, and seized thousands and thousands of grams of cocaine, heroin, and LSD, and marijuana. Now the question becomes, as we look at the changing of the mindset around laws, as to how we enforce the laws around those drugs, and at the same time the sentencing guidelines associated with it. Some of the sentencing guidelines are changing, as you know. So we have to adjust our strategies based on that. But let's face it, it's economics, and we have to be clear about the message we're sending to the community, that we're encouraging young people to get involved in summer employment, not the pharmaceutical business on the corner, because that is the future workforce in our city.
239-1310. One other thing, and then I'm going to open up to questions I have added. Have cities had some success in rezoning their zoning in residential neighborhoods so that it is illegal if a whole bunch of cars pull up and somebody comes out of a house and does a transaction in the car, that's deemed as running a business in a residential neighborhood, and police can crack down just because of that?
Some have had that, and as we get more advanced in our data-driven analysis here, and we're trying to include all city departments in helping not only with crime issue, but also quality of life issues, as the chief has alluded to, is some of that can be in place, but it takes a majority of council and obviously working with the mayor as well. In one case that I know personally because I was involved, there are actually injunctions that are now being filed throughout cities in the nation, and I was part of one that was a gang injunction where you prove that a gang causes so many issues in a residential area that they're a street-level gang. You can file a gang injunction through the court. And if they're hanging around each other, if they're hanging on the corner, if they're doing any type of – looks like any type of transaction at all, they can be held accountable for that. That is controversial in some areas, but it's something that some cities are looking to right now. Right now, I like the chief's approach by working with our social service partners, working with our other government agencies. If there's zoning issues, we can look at. If there's other things that we can do by utilizing laws for code enforcement,
right,
the ordinances also for animal care control, we'll utilize anything we can to get the person that's selling drugs in there. It's like the old fight law enforcement had about Al Capone. They never caught him doing the things that he was doing, but they got him on tax evasion. If there's a law out there that exists, the chief is looking for those.
Go ahead, Chief.
The director's right. I think the whole idea, remember the old drug-free zones, around schools? I mean, it was some, look, it took a point, they were controversial, and they're challenged at some point. But if community leads it, and talk about catchment areas where it's not allowed, and that's what we're doing with the whole idea of bringing city services, nuisance abatement, targeting apartment complexes or lack thereof in terms of management of those complexes, the community can drive that mission forward. But it has to be understood that we're not the only ones in this process. It is a system. We have to look at, again, the courts and understanding that, but the community impact letters, statements from the community, talking about what that impact is on that community, and the fact that those houses have to be identified. In fact, there's new locations and catchment areas has to be designed. Then we don't have that pushback from in terms of tort claims and things of that nature and part of our efforts.
This is a community conversation about crime, your opportunity to bring your concerns about crime and prevention to the public safety director of the city and the county, to the chief of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me a email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. A couple ground rules today, because I want to talk, and they want to talk to as many as possible. If you are a regular Even if you're anonymous, and I recognize that you're a regular anonymous voice, you are going to be held to a very strict time limit of 1 minute, and that includes your opening statement. So regulars, you're going to have to hit it and quit today, and I will cut you off, not to be disrespectful, but to move through. So I'm going to start with Pierre. Pierre, you have 1 minute.
All right, here we go. Amos, there's two people that, even though they're on the ballot, they need to be in this conversation, and that's John Layton and Terry Curry, because they're part of the solution. And John Layton has an opportunity to speak to those people who are out here committing the crimes because he gets to house them in his facility. Well, and thank you for taking my call. I got it.
All right, you did. I appreciate it, Pierre. Let me go to Reverend Phillips. Reverend Phillips, you have 1 minute starting now.
Okay, how y'all doing? I think that we're doing a good job out here, and let's continue doing it. And maybe God will heal this land. I believe he will heal this land once and forever. God bless you. Thank you.
All right, let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
There is an area, actually on West 24th Street, almost at School 87, in between School 87 and the new Center for Leadership Development, where, and actually it has been there for a long time. Sometimes men are drunk, their chairs and old tables and things. Sometimes there's a fire in the wintertime. It's very, very unfair to, most people don't even like to walk through there. They're afraid of them. Like I said, sometimes they're drunk and half-dressed and that type of thing. Who do you call, or what can be done? It's been there for years, and it's bad. It's hard on homeowners' property. What can be done, or who do you call, or can the police just, you know, trash it, take all that stuff out of there so they can't come? It's just an unfair situation.
All right, ma'am, what street is this on?
West 24th Street, almost at School 87.
Almost at 87. So on 24th Street, almost on 87, past Watkins Park, correct? And you said it's a house or a building?
No. There are people that gather there, men.
Okay.
With chairs and old tables, and in the wintertime they have old fires, and they're half drunk and half dressed. It's in the alley, not even a block from School 87 on 24th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be removed. People are afraid, and also it's hard on the properties.
All right, Chief?
Well, it's one of those...
Is that one y'all aware of?
Well, it's one of those social groups that gather in those neighborhoods and behind the buildings, and all the time things are accused of happening. But, yeah, we have a good thing about that in the neighborhood. There's been a lot happening in terms of that. The car wash up the street on Martin Luther King has been talked about. There are a couple things that Councilor Silly has worked on, and along with a couple other counselors in that general block, along with working with Dennis at the COD. So, yeah, we're familiar with the location, but I have to talk to her offline about how we want to approach
it. All right, I tell you what, ma'am, are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
All right, here's what I would like you to do. I would like you off the air in just a hot second. Chris, the gentleman that you called when you called me, is going to pick the phone back up off the air. If you would be so kind as to leave your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, that will be shared with the director and with the chief off the air, privately, just between in family, and someone will get back and follow up with you, okay?
Okay, thank
All right.
you.
That will allow me to talk to Tasha at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, I think that the city needs to be a little bit more proactive than reactive in wanting to fight crime. I remember when I was growing up in Gary more than 20 years ago, there was always summer activities for the children at no or very low cost. My family lives on the Far East Side, and I've been here for 13 years, and there's never anything that people can do without having to pay. However, the city is willing to invest in parks, and us as residents, we are the stakeholders, and we are part of the infrastructure, and we need investments in our people more than just $20,000 to local churches to pay kids to clean up on weekends.
When you say East Side, give me a couple big cross streets where you live at.
Let's say 42nd and Post, Mithoffer, 38th Street. In those areas, there is very little for the youth to do. There's no place for them to go. There's no Boys and Girls Club. Every summer, the Boys and Girls Club is searching for a location to hold activities for children. because there's no place for the people to go. And there's a cafe over there, but that costs. But you also have to have a place where the teenagers will want to go as well, because these are the people who are getting in trouble. We are a part of this city, and somebody needs to want to spend the money. We have all these budget surpluses all the way from the top. Speaking of state government, we're bragging on budget surpluses, but we're not spending the money on people. What happened to, you know, free summer swimming at the pool or paper mache at the school where they serve lunches? These things, they should be available to the kids.
All right, good point. What is being done in the summer? Is there anything in the pipeline? Summer, a lot of schools are out tomorrow. IPS is out, I think, another week. You know, what else is out there?
One of the things we found last year, and the director and I talked about this, was a latter part she talked about was hunger. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Rex and Parks did an outstanding job of is being able to fill that void of feeding families during the winter months, during the summer months, and doing it, making sure there was a great relationship between the parks and the children. Well, what the director and I have been on this campaign of sponsorship for young people. And proactively, yes, we're looking for jobs. We're looking for activities. We're looking to take our resources with our power programs and our summer youth programs, as we talk about our relationship with Boys and Girls Club and other programs. We have to partner and leverage our resources, because the need is greater than it's ever been before. But it is a collective effort, and we have to recognize, as you stated, government has said to us in Washington that states and cities have to be more self-sufficient, and we're trying to do just that. But we have to have everyone involved. Now, I applaud the three pastors you mentioned earlier, Covenant, Moore, and Jackson, for rolling up their sleeve and doing some great work on the east side. We have several of the churches right there in that community who have opened up their doors, whether it be vocational Bible school or operating through their gyms and gymnasiums on the east side. Far east side, that's doing a great job in employing kids and providing stipends. But it's not nearly all that we can do. So we do have to roll up our sleeves and open our collective minds and think about what we want to do.
Is there any way that the private sector can come and subsidize opportunities for young people to come together, you know, maybe, you know, pay the cost of, you know, real security to do it, pay the cost of the insurance necessary to hold the liability? When we had two young ladies that are trying to organize something out on the east side for next weekend at a low cost thing, trying to do something for the kids, like a Greek basketball tournament or something like that. And they were on this program, and they talked about the frustrations they were getting, the red tape roadblocks of putting something together like this, as well as the cost of hiring real off-duty law enforcement to protect that.
Right, and it is a problem. And let me just say this, as far as surpluses in government, there is not a surplus in city government. We're fighting potential deficits every year. And that's one of the reasons that when we sit and we talk about these community conversations, I share information. And one of the reasons the chief and I have been on television, at meetings, on your show as well, talking about it's time for citizens of this community to roll up their sleeves, volunteer to these areas, volunteer with those social service programs, give money to them to make sure that we have activities for young people during the summer. We're trying to do our part with our 5K that's free next week, mm-hmm. or on Saturday the 7th. Starts at 9 a.m. downtown. All the money that's raised that day is going to go to our social partners to provide summer job programs for youth. But we also need other opportunities, and there's a big opportunity for businesses to get involved. We have a new Department of Public Safety Foundation that's giving grants out. Central Indiana Community Foundation is starting to give grants out for these causes. There is movement in that direction. I think that's a good thing, and it's could only happen, I believe, in a city like Indianapolis that wraps its arms around and owns things and tries to fix it.
239-1310 afternoon. Amos, back to let me go to Chief right quick, and then go to Dave.
Give me an example of what Director's talking about, how important it is to have events. We've sanctioned when the city approves, a code enforcement approves, carnivals to come into the city. Let's talk about last week. We had a carnival at the Washington Mall. We had young people there having a great time. He tore down the mall with shots of fire. Now, who brings a 25 automatic to a carnival? So if we really want to talk about this, these are our children, mm-hmm. and we have to be clear. When they come, they have to come in the spirit of peace. They can't bring their weapons with them. It can't be shots fired. And instantly, what goes up comes down, a young man is struck. Mm-hmm. So we have to own what it is we want to see in our community.
Let me go back to the phones. And Dave. Hi, Dave.
Go.
Dave?
How you doing, Amos?
Fine. Come on with it.
Yeah, at 30th in Baltimore, there's a drug house next to a church. And then down the street from there, there's another one across the street from 110 School. And it's just getting ridiculous in the community how our people just, we got to realize the police need to be stronger and more proactive. I want them to be more proactive on it. But, man, it starts at the home and how our people are raised.
Let me go back. Dave, hold on a second. When you say a drug house is next to a school, how far from the school property?
Oh, man, Amos, I'm not
Is it a half a block, a whole block?
I would say within a half a block.
Within a half a block of the school?
Yes, man.
That prima facie, to use a legal term, may be against the law just there. And then you say there's a drug house next to a church. Is it right up against the church, or is it a few houses down?
I'll say, Amos, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Because I'm not that. About within 10 to 15 feet of this church, man, and there's people running in and out of there clowning.
It may be a law.
And I just pray that the police officers who are serious about it, you want them to be careful also, and for the people to stop doing that wickedness in this community, you know.
If you want to send them a further information, I'll probably get back to them.
All right, wait, hold on. Dave?
Yes.
If you would hold on and
Lieutenant Bailey's right there.
The chief wants to, you know, get a name and a number that they can, you know, follow up with you privately, off the record. Ain't nobody going to know. And follow up with you and get some exact information. Do you know whether the people coming in to buy the drugs live in the neighborhood? Are they coming from? Are the black folks coming, or are the white folks in black too?
That's the thing, Amos. I really don't want to say right now on the record.
All right, I don't want you to say it to the men and women of law enforcement off the record, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you. Let me go to Cheryl Lynn at 239-1310. Hi there.
Quick and to the point, Amos. I just want to say we didn't get the Super Bowl, and they had all that money waiting in case they did. Pour it out into some of these programs for the youth. Have a great day, Amos.
All right, I appreciate that. I'm asking that this week in the newspaper, but let me go to Elsie at 239-1310. Hi, Elsie.
Hey, Amos.
How are you?
And all of your guests. I agree with the lady called a while ago. You haven't got enough resources for the young people. When my children were younger, and which was about maybe 10 years ago, they used to have talent shows in the parks all over the city. And they had family things. You know, you could take your family. They had music in the park. And also, there was something else I had to say, but I forgot what it was. But anyway, yeah, we need more resources in the city, and I know you got the money. And I'm glad they didn't get the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel, because I feel like we need to get this city in order here before we bring a Super Bowl for somebody to get shot down.
All right, my dear. I appreciate it. 239-1310. Speaking of parks, Jack Reinhardt on Channel 6 says we're running short of park rangers. We're running short of park rangers?
We have park rangers. They're assigned to the police department, and they work for Chief Height. The question is going to be in the future. It's one of those areas of our police department and city government that was kind of put together after merger.
Right.
And should we expand park service? Should we start the process of eliminating it and hiring more officers to do that? There, it's a discussion that the chief and I need to have down the road. Now, what we have been able to do, though, is that even though those numbers have dwindled somewhat, mm-hmm. we've taken any savings we've been able to find in our budget, which is quite frankly millions of dollars, and I have to give a great deal of that credit to Valerie Washington, our mm-hmm. deputy director, and the good work she's been doing with the chief staff. We've taken those savings, and we're able to hire 50 police officers and 40 civilians this year because we felt like there was a greater need for police officers and civilian employees than park rangers at this time. It's one of those tough issues you have to face.
But historically, given that the park rangers started under the sheriff way back in the day, and then with the merger and all the politics, then the park rangers went from the sheriff to IMPD. If the park rangers are shorthanded and you are shorthanded and you need to use your dollars to hire sworn IMPD officers and civilians, why not just give the park rangers back to the sheriff? Let Sheriff Layton handle it. Let him deal with it.
Well, they're still reporting to us, and I think they were with the Parks Department at one time as well.
Yeah, so, with, yeah.
But it makes fighting crime and using data a lot easier if everybody works for the same person. And I'm happy that they're working with the chief right now.
All right, 239-1310. 239-1310 is Avenue News. Name is We'll Take a Break. We'll be back with more. The lines are lined up. You can also get through. Send me an email at praiseindy.com. Just go to praiseindy.com. You see my picture. You click on the word email. It's real simple. Or send me a text message, 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos. We got Anonymous. We got another Anonymous. And we have Rose at 239-1310. It's a community conversation. Conversation is going great, but you, especially you way over there, you could have the best suggestion of all. Just give us a call after these. And it's a community conversation with crime with the public safety director and the police chief to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello. I heard something on the radio the other day in a neighborhood where someone had told something to the police about something that was going on in the neighborhood, and then the police yelled that person's name out and just basically put them on blast. Now, to me, that police officer should have been dealt with right then and there, and that's preventing people from speaking out when they have incidents like that. And they said that it's ongoing thing in that neighborhood. So I would like to know, what are y'all going to do about that?
That was a caller that called on the show maybe about a month and a half ago, that and several people called in with that, Chief.
Well, you know, I hear that quite a bit in the last couple of days on town hall meetings I attended with the senator. But the question becomes now, as we're moving away from communicating directly, we're moving towards the Crime Stoppers, which are 262 tips. You remain anonymous. People are texting us and sending information, very little information in terms of names of being put across the airways or even being texted out there to the community. So I'd like to be able to find out if, in fact, that's true, who's doing it, and how that information is being disseminated, because most of our information is coming in anonymously or through process like this. But if you have a case, we would like to know about it.
So if somebody called your folks, mm-hmm, and they responded, and the person across the street that they call to say, hey, you need to turn your music down or you're doing something wrong, and the person says, well, who told you all? And the police officer said, well, the people over there, you want to know about it, because that's not what the officer is supposed to do.
Because communication is really controlled through the sheriff's office, and we want to look at that, because that information is not shared over the airways, nor is it text or email out. So I'm like, want to find out, how do they know that person was the one that made the call? I like to know how they get the information and who, in fact.
So hold on a second. So when somebody calls 911,
right,
and says, "Hey, I think there's some mess going on at 30th in Baltimore,"
right,
when it is radioed out from 911 to the nearest car, they're not saying Amos at 30th in Baltimore said that Chris is doing something wrong across the street.
You're absolutely right. And information oftentimes comes across the mobile data terminal, the computer in their car, where the complaint is. The complaint is, not the complainant, because we're concerned.
So there is the complaint.
Yes.
Some guy called and said Chris ain't doing right.
Right.
But not that Amos said Chris isn't doing right.
Exactly right. The whole point is not to make the complainant the target, mm-hmm, because people would never provide information. But we get a ton of information from community through a number of sources, whether they text it or they call directly to the anonymous 262 tips, mm-hmm, and they provide information that way. But in fact, that's happening. We want to know about it like yesterday.
All right. And so, Anonymous, if you remember when, well, you would have heard the radio, so I appreciate that. Let me go to Anonymous, another Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
My whole thing is this. I understand that the law enforcement and the state and the government, they can only do so much. All of this starts at home, especially with the youth. There is a lack of respect, morals, and values that are being taught in the homes. And my thing is, since the parent can't seem to raise their kids right, if their kid commits a crime, they need to be charged with it. Because if you can't raise the kids right, if you're not doing what you need to do as a parent, then that is something wrong. So when your son or daughter goes out and shoots and kills someone, then you need to be charged with that crime as well, because you have failed them as a parent. I mean, have law enforcement looked into anything like that?
That's a great question.
That is something that, through the community conversations, that individuals have asked us to put together a group to look at juvenile crime issues. The question that we have to really look at is, is there really a parent at home that's taking care of this child? It's surprisingly, there's a lot of times there's not. I agree that parents should be held responsible for their children. How do we craft something that holds people responsible? But what do you do with that young lady that's raising a child on her own? She's working two jobs to make ends meet. Her child gets in trouble. She's doing the best she can. Are we going to punish her as well? There's got to be the wisdom of Solomon in some of this, and we have to figure out if we're going to craft those laws, how that works. And once we do have that, are we going to provide as government or through social services some help to help that family establish some type of foundation that they can build upon?
Do we also, as a community, appreciate it, Anonymous, thank you, some real specifics at how much of the crime are individuals under 18 and over 18? You all were very gracious in sharing data, not just on homicides, but what you all call NSF, which is non-fatal shootings. In other words, somebody shot, threw a brick, did something, caused bodily harm to somebody, but the person they caused harm to survived. And of that number, for 2012, 16.5% of all the victims of non-fatal shootings were under the age of 18. Only 4.2% were under the age of 15. In 2013, 14% were under the age of 18. When you look at the percentage of suspects that y'all have caught, the ones you've caught, only 15% in 2012 were under the age of 18, 16% in 2013. The bulk of the victims, the bulk of the suspects, 57% in 2012, 59% in 2013 between the ages of 18 and 34. Of the suspects, 55% in 2012 and 72% last year were 18 to 34. You all have heard going out to in these conversations, kids, 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 teens, 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 young people, young people, young people. And I think the common perception is in the community, the majority or a huge percentage of this crime is being committed by people under the age of 18, but the facts do not show that. Do we need to do a better job of separating between juveniles who are legally under the control of their parents versus young adults who may, in some cases, literally be on their own and out of the control of their parents?
Well, I think you're correct there, is we need to make sure that people understand. That's why we're having community conversations and sharing the data and making sure people understand. Why I think that a lot of people go to youth is because from the individuals that are arrested, they talk about what happened to them when they were young people that led to this life. And if we're serious about long-term crime prevention, you know, I'd like to think that the chief and my responsibility to the city is not just today, but 5 and 10 years and longer down the road. We have to look at those individuals coming out of prison now, and also young people. Are we giving them the opportunities we had when we were growing up to be successful? Quite frankly, I don't think they have the same opportunities that maybe the three of us had when we were growing up. We want to make sure they have those opportunities to succeed.
The other part of his name is that I think the whole idea of sensationalism, when you hear a 16-year-old committing a heinous crime against an adult, whether it be a homicide or aggravated assault, you often ask yourself a question. Well, how many more do we have like that? But to the director's point, when we talk about what is the root causes, it goes back to, for example, a tough subject right now is truancy and curfew. When we talk about gateway crimes, when we talk about things as simply shoplifting, things that lead to other types of crime, the first offense is what we want to be able to identify and then get them into some type of services.
Let me go on truancy. Now, school is ending, which now gives y'all 6 to 8 weeks to get ready for school is starting. Are we going to see finally some kind of coherent truancy plan, scheme, game plan once school starts in this county?
The truancy will have to work with the local school districts as well, but we think that the best way to help the truancy issue is to begin at the first day of summer break, making sure they have mentors, role models, summer jobs programs. Then they have mentors and individuals that are holding them accountable as they go to school. We can punish for truancy. And we can suspend people. What do you do if somebody's truant from school? You suspend them. They're suspended to school. I've been to visit schools in the morning, see the kids come in the block. Some of them turn left to go into school. Those that are suspended turn right to go do whatever they're going to do. There are groups right now that are looking to try to form a charter school that will take anyone that's been suspended,
right,
and they have to go to this school, mm-hmm, where they get closer supervision. They can't leave. They have to be there. They're being held accountable. I think that's a good step in the right direction. It will help us with our truancy issue. It helps us with some of those small crimes that come. And it makes sure, more importantly, these young people are getting educated. We have to do a better job of educating our young people and preparing them. I am very happy to see what a lot of the school districts are doing. The new superintendent, who I've met with once, and all the chiefs met with more than once, and what he's doing to try to raise educational attainment. That is the number one thing we can do, is to help Dr. Farabee and the other superintendents be successful. That's our responsibility in public safety.
All right, a couple of emails at praiseindy.com. One, what funds have been allocated to the Office of Reentry beyond the salary of Dr. Jenkins, who I believe is head of reentry that's now in the Department of Public Safety? Does Dr. Jenkins have supporting staff to implement any efforts out of his office? How often are city leaders even meeting with the Office of Reentry?
Dr. Jenkins is a member of our staff. He reports directly to me and Deputy Director Washington. When we have our staff meetings every Monday, he's part of that staff meeting. He has goals and objectives. When I took over having that under my command, the first thing I wanted Dr. Jenkins to do is to go out and get to familiarize himself with all the reentry functions that are going on in our community. What we heard from those providers is they needed someone to help coordinate activity, so that we don't have one group reinventing the wheel and not spending money wisely. Because that job has become so large, we have hired a second individual for reentry. We are now taking grant money and passing through to make sure that we are able to do things like first day in video.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we mean by that is, I think it's ridiculous to think about reentry and think we're going to try to help someone reenter society the first day they leave prison. We need to start talking about what are we going to do the first day they're in, and educating them on what is available to them to be successful. They need to start working first day in. Dr. Jenkins and his assistant and all of our community partners worked very hard to put together a recording that prisoners now see on their first day in,
mm-hmm,
on how to be successful and hopefully monitor them and track them throughout this process. It's at the beginning stages, but we're going to continue to grow that office, continue to work. We believe that over 50,000 prisoners will see that video this
right
year.
Another question from Clarissa, whose husband was murdered in December of 2005. It is still an unsolved crime. Her brother was murdered in October 2005. A suspect was captured in 6 days. It was over in Hallville. The people in Hallville cooperated with law enforcement. But she says a couple of things. One, we need better and different parenting skills, people who are willing to give the officers good information. She also says IMPD needs to follow up with family members of the victims regarding unsolved homicides. It's been 9 years. We cannot just forget the victims and the family. Chief, with the shortage of officers that you have, can you even devote officers to work the cold cases, or even have civilians just to follow up with families in cold cases, even if it's just to say, we got nothing new, we just wanted to see how you're getting along?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the things we've done as a result of the community conversations and other outreach activities, Coffee with the Cop, was finding that people wanted to talk about cases. What we did was we now have a 24 to 72 hour response to every homicide that takes place. But now we're finding that there's closure that needs to happen with those cases, the cold cases. So in doing that, we talked to the cold case squad, which, by the way, have done the yeoman's work on their own. I mean, a lot of them volunteer their own time, after retirement even, to come back and help in those cases. But it comes down to a matter of what we're getting right now is real dual-time information, new, fresh information about those cases. And people are coming forth who may have didn't remember much a few years ago, but now starting now, their memory is getting a little better, and they're starting to share that information with us. So we're going to continue to do that outreach piece. But I think we have to recognize that homicide is one of the easiest crimes to solve, because people know who they are who commit those crimes.
239-1310. I got a stacked text message at 37890, keyword Amos, says, tell Chief Height IMPD's downtown district entire unit provides top-notch service to our neighborhoods. However, can you explain why there's little to no resources dedicated toward enforcement of speed limits on our residential streets? The posted speed limit on West 10th and 11th is 30 miles per hour. The average speed is closer to 45. We have seniors and disabled people who fear for their lives lives on our neighborhood streets. DPW says it's IMPD's responsibility to enforce the limits. Can more be done? Their lives matter just as the next person's.
Well, it's, the easy answer is yes, there's something we can do about it. Collectively, traffic studies, looking at whether or not speed bumps would be appropriate, looking at some type of use of signage and or automatic signals, we can evaluate that. Go ahead.
But, Chief, the perception is that the radar guys aren't out the way they used to be back in the day.
Well, I'm not going to cop this out, but we're asking our radar guys to do two things, to be part of the event to take place in our community.
Right.
Traffic is traffic. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, they also have been asked to do work in the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. We have to target those individuals who bring drugs into the same drug package we heard in the neighborhoods, and those guns come through cars, and we have to have traffic stops and gather intel as we identify that problem. So we're stretching it to do both. We're blessed that the director and the mayor and the city council is providing us with 50 additional officers in the next few weeks, but we have to then talk about how we utilize, again, signage, devices. There are devices out there. I'll just say this: that we can actually use automation to be able to track speed.
Oh, no, people! The cameras that take your picture and
red light cameras and speed cameras. There's a lot of technology out there.
But here's a dumb question: Is the law designed so a civilian cannot stand out there with the radar gun and clock folks and get license plate numbers? It has to be a sworn – I'm trying to help y'all. Can't be a sworn officer or in school zones with the radar gun, and then they just copy down all the license numbers of the people that are speeding and mail them a ticket.
We'll talk about reserve program in a few minutes. We have 14 additional people wanting to volunteer to be reserves.
So reserves could do that.
We can get volunteers to help us with that process.
239-1310. 239-1310. I'm trying to help.
We appreciate all the help we get.
Let me go back to the phone. Rose has been waiting patiently. Rose, thanks for waiting.
That's okay. First of all, I'd like to congratulate the chief on hiring those of color for the police department that's ready to start. But my question is, I do have a son that applied. He's 21, and the last thing he did was the interview. And he hasn't heard from anything since the interview, which the next thing, I think, was a lie detective test. And my question is, have you guys finished for the year? Or are you going to have another group of people you're bringing in? Or how does that work?
Well, ma'am, we have a mandate from the director to bring about the hiring of 80 people. We have 50 coming on board, and there will be another group shortly thereafter. Again, we can take information and kind of like maybe figure out where he is. And he wouldn't be in his first group. Most likely, he's been if he got an interview last week, I can tell you he's being considered as an applicant or candidate for the second group.
Okay, probably a couple weeks ago, I think, was his interview.
Okay, that would be about right. So if we don't mind, if you want, we can take the information.
Definitely, offline. I know you, and I think you can make some things happen. And he's a good kid, and we're trying to do something positive, you know. Versus going to the service, maybe we can save people here in our own city.
Well, thank you for stepping up and taking that challenge.
All right, so Rose, hold on, and Chris will get your information off the air. We'll take a break. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after whose name is, besides the chief and the public safety director, the person behind Crime Stoppers at 262 Tips. He's going to be, he's here.
Unsung hero.
We're really going to find out, what does Crime Stoppers do? Is it Dick Tracy, or is it another group of people? And also, we got some folks with domestic violence, because that is on the rise here in Indianapolis, and that sometimes contributes to homicide. And, you know, the police department, you know, unfortunately had to experience that firsthand. It's after News with Amos, after these. Back to the phones with the chief and the public safety director in a community conversation is Bobby. Hi, Bobby.
Yes, Amos, I have two questions. Number one... How do we come short of police officers in the first place? And number two, why don't we have the FBI take over the city until you get some more officers?
All right, let's take the second question first. Why can't the FBI just come in here and take over?
Well,
till you get more officers.
I need to hear the first one. Let me try the first one. Like,
what was the first one again, Bobby? I'm sorry.
How do we come short of officers in the first place?
Wasn't it a lot of officers, their 20 years was up, and they decided to cast in their chip?
We did a whole efficiency team to look at allocation of resources, and one of the things we found is Indianapolis suffered like every other city in 2008 with the downturn. The thing that Indianapolis was able to do that other cities couldn't do, unfortunately, was it was able to not have to lay off officers and civilian employees. Did not keep up with hiring because of that. Every city in America dealt with it. Our numbers are very close in comparison to cities our size. But at the end of the day, we knew we had to do something. We have saved enough money within the budgets to hire 50 officers with that. The mayor was pushing for 30 additional. The council granted that. We do not have sustainable funding for that 30 to increase that next year, but we're going to hire 80 officers this year. That's the first time we're going to be above attrition in quite some time. That is a huge commitment. It says a lot about Valerie Washington, the chief staff, finding those savings, the mayor going out and trying to get additional money. We're trying to get sustainable funding in the future to add. So we're going to be adding to our officers, our civilians that we're adding to. Any officers in those positions will move back to the streets, which is going to be a huge benefit to us. That's something the chief really pushed for.
One of the TV stations said that state police are going to be patrolling some areas of the city. Did the TV station get that wrong, or what's the state police doing?
Well, I'll add a question to his part. We're going to thank our partner who's leaving, by the way. Today is his last day. He's moving on to Washington. Bob Jones, special agent in charge, has given us a tremendous amount of support.
Oh, especially the FBI. He's done such a good job, they kicked him upstairs.
He's moved on to bigger and better things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he has not forgotten us, and he left a good guy in charge who's carrying on the mission of enforcement in the areas we need assistance with. Now, task forces is what we're going to. We have task forces with FBI and other agencies to assist us. State police is also a partner, great partner, with Superintendent Doug Carter. What we'll find, you'll find us unveiling some things in terms of how we're going to do our work with our enforcement around task forces, which we already have. But the idea of it being not necessarily shared right now is the reason, because we want to talk about how it's going to actually look in
it. But it would not be state police officers patrolling neighborhoods.
Not in the traditional sense. There will be some things you heard about today that we'll be looking into in terms of covert investigations.
Oh, yeah, we want them in here. Let me go to Sam at 239-1310. Hi, Sam. You got about a minute.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon, Chief, and good afternoon, Public Safety Director. I begin by saying, please, Chief Rick Hite, I support you. I love you. I know you care about this community, and I do support you. My question to the director is, and I saw the state police piece as well, as far as, like, your house, internally, the past couple of months, I've seen police officers arrested for drinking and driving, being drunk, causing accidents, and officers on what I call mood swing medication. If I'm pulled over by a police officer, can you reassure me that this officer is not drunk and is not on medication? Thank you.
Great question, Sam. Thank you.
That is a good question. It's a fair question. And I can tell you one of the things I was concerned about when I arrived in October of 2012 was the disciplinary process for police officers. I have worked with the IMPD when I was a police officer in Louisville, and I found them to be very professional, and I found that since I've been here. But remember, it's a big organization. It's an organization that has probably, you know, 1,700 or 1,800 people working for it right now. It's a large operation. Chief Hite is in charge of that. But something that I was concerned about when I arrived was that the chief did not have the authority over the investigative part of the for officers, whether it was a complaint about speeding or it was a criminal act. We changed that fairly quickly. We also have revamped the whole process for complaints on officers. When I arrived, there'd be a complaint on an officer that could have lasted for 2 years. That's unfair for the officer. That's unfair to the citizen. I think the longest complaint we have now is somewhere between 60 and 90 days. So we have a new system in place. We are bought computer software that gives us details on individuals that are being complained upon. And at the end of the day, the decision on discipline up to termination rests with the chief of police where it should be. And I will say this, the chief has been very detailed in his approach towards investigating officers, has terminated a great deal of officers since she's been here, a handful, I should say, but they are not indicative of the men and women that work so well day in and day out, and that's why the chief works so hard in making sure that he removes those officers that don't deserve to wear the badge of IMPD.
Back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm a first-time caller. Hold on, first-time caller.
I got to give you a salute. There you go. Go ahead.
Okay, I was calling. My question is for Chief Hite. I recently applied and went through the process for becoming a sworn police officer, but where I failed was the physical agility test. What I want to know is I understand why it has to be so difficult, but why make it so difficult when after being, you know, a police officer, because one of the things the guy said, we want to make sure you guys will be physically able to, like, run after that bad guy or whatever. But there are plenty of police officers who are overweight and cannot run after a police officer, I mean, a bad guy. So my question is, like, why make it so difficult? Because, you know, you might be weeding away potentially really good police officers because they failed. Maybe when I've seen people get let go because they couldn't, they miss one push-up or one sit-up for throughout the test.
Well, what we're saying is the process is good for 2 years. I mean, I understand what you're saying. And we're reviewing the minimum standards now. And what we've done, something that's different in policing, is we're actually providing you with an opportunity to come back and reapply. And what you're doing at the same time is we're going to give you a planned workout. What we want to do is bring people together prior to they're going through the process and prepare them in the future as to what to expect when they take the physical agility test. And then we'll have sessions where people can come together and actually work out together. That's something we talked about in the last couple of weeks. You're absolutely right, because upper body strength is the problem with a lot of women in law enforcement. I believe that's something we can overcome, because you're right. There's something, if you miss about one push-up and that's it, and you're academically sound, you have the right spirit of mission and not adventure, yeah, we want you being part of IMPD.
Is there like retests, not retests, but like, you know, things that older officers have to go through to make sure that they, if in a chase, they can catch the bad guy?
Well, they have the annual physical, mm-hmm. understanding what it is. But to the point where she's making that we have to be clear that physical is a part of what we do in law enforcement.
Right.
But there's a lot more parts to the critical mission of being a police officer.
All right. Let me go to another anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, Amos.
Hi.
And hi to your panel.
Hi.
My question is, I believe I've seen on the news where you were hiring a policeman, but the percentage of white kind of doubled the percentage of the other officers. I know a lot of the crime is being committed by African Americans, some of it. So why is there not more African America being hired for the position?
Well, ma'am, let me just say this to you. I kind of beg to differ a bit, because looking at the last class, it was close to 35-45%. And I think we're close to that mark now with minorities, in particular African American and women. And what we're finding is that we had about 150 or so who actually applied. Now, what we have to do is recognize that in our community, and being African American, I can say this. Being in law enforcement, it wasn't always looked upon as being a favorable job. And what we have tried to do, and what we're going to continue to do with the help of you and others, is dispel the myths that go along with the policing issue. We recognize there's been a history that goes along with that. We have to move past that point, but recognize that this is a great profession. I've been in it. I'm second generation, and I spent 36 years in this profession. I love it, and I think we have to talk about the good things about it. But let's face it, not many of our young people feel that way, and we've done a great job in terms of going out there and identifying quite a few who feel that way in this next class.
Let me be fair, and I can understand where the caller's coming from. See something on television that says 60-65% of the new class is white. Well, I just what you said, sure. But we've had classes before where all of the recruits were of one color and they were monochromatic. So to have gone to a class that I thought the figure I saw was at least a third.
It's 28% is African American, 12% Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. Which that's a third minority. I've never seen that at IMPD.
That's 40%, which is huge. And let me say this, because I've taken a lot of hits on this, is when I arrived, we looked at the demographics. I was concerned because even though we only have like, what is it, Chief, 13-14% African American on the police department, mm-hmm. woefully inadequate. Mayor has said that as well. We've talked about that. We focused on that. Then we have to realize that 40% of our African-American police officers can retire. Mm-hmm. So that's really going to put us even in worse shape down the road. What we did, and what the chief and HR deserves a lot of credit for, is we put a team together, we looked at this, and we went out and we recruited. We didn't lower standards. We didn't do anything that people are accusing us of. We went out and we recruited the individuals that live in this community, and we would get anybody from around as well, and we got the best and brightest we could find, mm-hmm. and it's a diverse group. When you recruit the right way, when you go in your community and you recruit, you're going to get a diverse group. No one got through this test because they're African-American or Hispanic. They got here because they deserve to be IMPD officers, and they're going to have to prove themselves through training. We think we've done a pretty good job, but I will tell you this, Amos, when you look at the group of people we're recruiting from, we're still not at those diversity numbers we need to be at. We've made great progress. There still needs to be work to be done.
239-1310. 239-1310. It's After News. Name is a community conversation on crime. How do we reduce it? How do we all become like the crime dog and take a bite out of crime? The public safety director is here. The chief is here. We got others coming as well. And your opportunity, 239-1310, or send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, or an email at praiseindy.com. It's After News with Amos after these.